The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Sometimes I have to laugh at myself. I was thinking about what I wanted to say to start this hour. I was thinking I was going to say, Seth, I know how to brighten your day.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
And I thought,
well, it is a bright day.
I thought, well, this will brighten your day. It'll brightens my day, but I don't know if I'm speaking for anybody else here.
I got my Mr. Rogers stamps in the mail.
How many?
300.
Sheets? Mm-hmm. Books? No, rolls? How are they?
They came in sheets, but I got a total of 300.
What are you going to do with them?
Send letters.
Mm. I thought maybe you would make it. Could actually make frame them. Could actually make an interesting wall hanging.
Yeah, if I were into philately.
Well,
which I am not.
300 Mr. Rogers stamps. You can understand why I might have gotten the impression you were.
I read years ago in Jimmy Buffett's first book that we all really only know 300 people. And I always, since I read that, I was fascinated by that point. I think you.
My reaction is really that many.
Think about. So we have Facebook friends, and the average Facebook user, minus you since you went off it or whatever you did yesterday, right?
I have my account, but I took all the applications off my phone because
Smart.
The only person I want eavesdropping on me is Mrs. Buskirk.
Fair enough. And she'd be bored and say things like, who? What
right.
the heck are you
what
talking
the heck
about?
And who?
Yeah. So the average Facebook user, according to the stats I pulled up, have somewhere a little over 300 friends. A little over 300.
Okay.
And it's probably, if you look at your friends or my friends on Facebook, we don't know a lot of them well.
Certainly not. There
right.
are people that are at a...
So people who have 600, 800, 1,000, you got to realize if they were to have a wedding...
Oh, my good buddy.
Yeah. If they were to have a wedding, we're not going into those numbers, probably.
Not just that, but people who your Facebook friends with, which if you ran into on the street, you would have no idea you
okay,
who
so
this
that
person
exists,
was.
Right? Yeah. So let's go back to this 300 number. I'm just fascinated. I think that's about right. The more I was
the
talking
perfect
about
number
it
for
with
repelling
people,
the Persians, 300
also, right? That number comes up again, too. Yeah, you think about... what kind of time you have in life, what kind of social abilities and expansiveness you have in life, you probably only have room to know about somewhere near 300 people fairly well, of their kids, of their family, something of their life, right? That's why I ordered 300.
So each one of those people is getting a letter, postcard, something.
Well in a perfect world where everything matches exactly,
Christmas card.
Sure. But I just figured, well, I probably will have 300 acquaintances worthy of getting snail mail. And I'd like them to have a Mr. Rogers stamp because I think that will brighten their day. Am I the only one that thinks when you get a unique stamp on a piece of mail, on a letter, that it gives you a little pause? The writer thought something of it. It's not the usual.
No, you are
nothing against the American flag. I love it. But it's not the usual forever stamp with just a flag or an owl or whatever. I like owls, too. Whatever. You get the point. There are these standardized stamps.
Yeah, no. You're asking the question, are you the only one?
Ronald Reagan stamps.
No, you are not the only one. You are, however, the only one who is not referred to regularly as grandma.
I write a lot of letters.
Mrs. Robinson, and that's really a laugh.
I write a lot of letters. I do. I probably send five letters a week.
A card with a nice, crisp $5 bill inside of it.
No, I probably do about – how many letters a week do you fire off through snail mail? Most
Zero.
People don't do it. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't do it anymore. I do probably 3 to 5 a week.
I am dealing with an organization now.
Yes.
And I love them dearly. They send everything via snail mail.
Right.
I guess, except for when there are things that clearly should just be emailed and then like a PDF that needs something looked at. I don't need to see it 10 days from now. Like 30 seconds from now would be good, too.
Okay, yeah. If there's a sense of urgency, I get that. But I'm not talking about that corporate stuff. I'm talking about a personal handwritten note. I do about 3 to 5 a week.
Do you really?
I really do.
What do you write? The interesting thing about this to me is what? I have received zero.
Well,
I guess I've got a, well, you know, so that's about a, what, 150, 160 a year. I'm not in, clearly not in the top 150 or 160.
To be fair.
I'm down at the bottom level of that 300 total people, I suppose.
To be fair, we see each other every day and talk several times a day outside of even seeing each other.
And so
the
letter
might be super erogatory.
If a letter is meaningful.
Yes.
And a letter with a well-conceived, well-thought-out stamp is even more so. I just thought maybe in the past 160 letters I would have gotten one.
Have you not received a letter from me at some point in the last 3 months? I bet you have.
No.
Ask the fetching Mrs. Buskirk. I would be shocked if the answer is no. Ask the fetching Mrs. Buskirk.
I will ask her. I know the answer. The answer is no. I see our mail.
Who do you think gets our mail? We have a
There are two people not sending problems. There are two people in our house that like the mail. Me and one of the kids. Everybody else could care less. It'll be stuffed and flowing out into the street.
Ask the fetching Mrs. Buskirk if you have not received a letter from me in the last 3 months.
If she is listening, she ought to text me now.
And she should be listening.
Well, that goes without saying.
And she should be listening. We shame and praise at the same time.
We're like the president. We give a little, we take a little. Do you want to know what I was really thinking would brighten your day?
This great new tweet that someone just posted.
By the way, I'll be checking my mail the rest of the week.
Shep is now on, so turn to Fox Business.
Is he talking about Mr. Rogers?
Just generally.
Yeah, I'd like to cancel my mail.
Anyway.
Heather McDonald.
Yeah.
She sent me an email this morning.
Sent me a letter.
I'm sure she did. I'm not on anybody's letter
just
list.
Saying.
I get Sprouts. They send me the letter with the mailer. It tells me what's on sale this week, but that's about it. Also, I get a lot from someone who they know me as Occupant.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
the previous owner?
I always assumed it was me. I thought that was an honorific.
Because sometimes I'll get the previous owner. Whose name was Occupant. They must have lived in both of our houses.
What about Resident? Mm-mm. No, they didn't live in your place. they apparently lived at my place. Anyway, Heather McDonald. She wrote something for City Journal yesterday. Just a little short piece called Reject the Diversity Mandate. We're talking about some of the folks in the president's cabinet, which has really been – it really has been if you were to plot this on a graph, fat curves, as they say. In other words, there's outliers on both sides, really good and really bad, right? Tillerson really was on the really bad side. I don't know what he was doing most of the time he was there.
Standard deviation to the left even, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Not good. And then you had Shulkin, got rid of the VA. He's gone as of today. You've got that group over there. Then you've got this other group who are quite good. We're talking about Scott Pruitt at the EPA. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, the two really good Scots. He's at the FDA. I know that's not a cabinet level position, but a senior appointment.
One that usually Republicans are afraid to put great people in. By the way,
Gottlieb is doing great work.
Right.
He is doing great work that nobody is talking about. But that's, and we're going to continue that tradition. not talking about it. We'll pass right by it.
We'll bookmark that for later.
But somebody who is doing good things is Ryan Zinke at the Department of the Interior. And Heather McDonald is writing in City Journal because this doesn't even come up in the ordinary course of his job as Secretary of the Interior. But she says, whatever, there's been a little kerfuffle. I don't know if you followed it with Ryan Zinke.
Yeah.
Reject the diversity mandate, says President Donald Trump is facing a revolt from his base for having signed the bloated omnibus spending bill that torpedoes his drain the swamp pledges. But the president now has an opportunity to achieve a small measure of redemption. He should offer loud and unequivocal support to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who is being hammered for reportedly having rejected identity politics in favor of, wait for it, meritocracy. Cue Amy Wax. Zinke is facing a storm of media criticism from liberals for allegedly saying that diversity is not important, though his office denies that he said this.
Which they shouldn't be doing. Go run with that.
If she addresses this, we don't know if he said it or not.
Fair enough. If
he said it, they certainly should not deny it. They should own it and put it right back in their faces. I'm going to let Heather speak for herself because it's Heather, so she does it better than we're going to do it anyway.
Yes.
The same sources that reported Zinke's comments say that he followed up by stating that what he cared about was excellence, and that by hiring the best people, he would in fact put together the most diverse group anyone has ever had. This second statement is a cowardly concession, as is his denial of his initial diversity observation, assuming that he made the initial statement. Sometimes meritocracy will yield diversity, sometimes it won't. The point is that it doesn't matter. Diversity should not be an end in itself. Excellence is the goal. Rejecting the primacy of diversity constitutes a head-on assault on the received wisdom of Washington and elite American culture. Gender and racial quotas have been the order of business for the last three decades. The Me Too movement has only intensified pressure on public and private organizations to hire based on sex and skin color. The result? Wasted resources, the sidelining of merit, and ever more virulent and irrational identity politics. The rule of the diversity regime is that you're required to be fanatically obsessed with race and gender until you aren't, because at that unpredictable moment, whenever it comes, nothing noticing race and sex becomes racist and sexist. Comment on that on the other side. I'm Chris. He's Seth. We'll be right back. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. The Nixon Library is it's worth going to, right? We've both been there.
I loved it. Orange County? Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, it's in Orange County, California. It's beautiful. What brings this up? I don't even know what brings this up, but we were talking about Hugh Hewitt,
who was the first executive director of the Nixon Library.
That's right. That's exactly right. And we both had experiences there. Me when I was working for the Claremont Institute way back when, and you just as an aficionado of presidential history.
Well, I've always been fascinated by Nixon, and I think I've read almost every biography of his that there is. I know why I've always been fascinated by him. But when that library opened, we were only how far away? 30 minutes, 40 minute drive from the Nixon Library?
Yeah, something like that.
We went down and they had these T-shirts for sale with one of my favorite quotes of Richard Nixon's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from one of the great all-time speeches of Richard Nixon's. No, not the Checkers speech, but his extemporaneous farewell speech to the White House, which is really quite a speech. You can get it on YouTube. It's autobiographical and sad and serious and moving. And one of his last lines is something along the – I'll get it pretty close – something along the lines of – one of his last sentences, something along the lines of, only until you've been through the lowest of valleys can you appreciate the highest of mountaintops. And they had that on a T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
funny enough. And I'd always liked that quote.
It's good. Yeah, it's a good line.
So I bought 20 of those T-shirts. Are you seeing a pattern here? When I see something I like, I buy in bulk stamps, T-shirts.
Well, I know you probably sent those to friends.
Didn't.
I did not get one.
No, I wanted to sell them. I thought they would sell big time on the college campus for the campiness effect, because it's kind of campy. Nixon, you know, college campus.
So this explains why you're not in the retail business today.
Very much so. Early lesson.
So I assume you have 20 of those left.
I don't know whatever happened to them, to be honest with you. They're probably in – I don't know where they are. I really don't. But – so I bought 20 of them to resell, thinking people would get a kick out of them and be a campy thing. Like, you know, there were fads with silly T-shirts. And it was my first entree into understanding how humorless political liberals are.
That's true.
It really was. And I remember my favorite quote of all was from a college student. It was just the greatest quote of all. You know what he said to me?
Are we allowed to say it on the radio?
Yeah, no, we can. He said, I thought this was a liberal arts campus. And I said to a professor of history who is a liberal, I said to him, I'm just amazed at the humorlessness of my fellow students. And I told him that story and he said, oh, well, it's not that they're humorless, it's that they're dumb.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
Yeah, both.
So I had a college T-shirt selling experience myself.
Oh, did you?
I did. Did you go door to door, knock on the dorm room doors? Yeah. Did you sell any?
Not one.
So myself and a partner, we made co-ed naked lacrosse t-shirts and sold those door-to-door. They did quite a bit better than the Richard Nixon t-shirts.
And that's why you're in retail and I'm not. I do wholesale.
Oh, my God. That is funny. Nobody's buying my Nixon t-shirts. What the heck?
And this guy Buskirk, three stands down, he's got the, he's nude. Nude.
He's got the, he's, yeah. got the, he's got the co-ed naked lacrosse yeah. t-shirts. He's selling out.
On like hotcakes.
Can they not read? Yeah. Do they not see the picture of Nixon? It's right there on the front.
I know, right.
This is a great, moving, inspirational quotation.
Right.
From his extemporaneous
right.
remarks.
One of the great.
On leaving the White House.
Right. Ben Stein was in the audience.
Ben Stein was in the audience,
he
right.
was.
So did you only try and sell them at your college at Pitzer? Or did you go maybe?
I think, you know, one student said try selling them at CMC, but still no takers. It just didn't work. It was a bad idea.
Yeah. Did you? Well, I hope maybe at least you drove back to the Nixon Library and kept your receipt. Oh, these 20 larges. As it turns out, I only need one.
No. I think we were giving them away at some point.
So you still had 20 at the yeah. end of free, exactly. free.
You can only, it's not like I'm Arthur Farnsorelli where you're going to open my closet and see 20 t-shirts of the same thing.
It's not like I'm Arthur Farnsorelli.
That sentence hasn't been uttered on talk radio
ever.
In 20 years or ever, right.
All right, should we go back to Heather MacDonald?
Yeah.
Heather will pull us out of this morass. She says, I love this last line, though. She says, the rule of the diversity regime is that you're required to be fanatically obsessed with race and gender until you aren't.
Yeah.
Because at that unpredictable moment, whenever it comes, noticing race and sex becomes racist and sexist.
Yep.
She says, what's fantastic about the Ryan Zinke story, Zinke being the Secretary of the Interior, she says, which appears to be gaining momentum, is that the Interior Secretary is being condemned for allegedly saying that he discounts racial categories in hiring and prefers, quote, having the right person for the right job, close quote. This position, uncontroversial for decades, I would say millennia, and Heather would probably agree, but this position, uncontroversial for decades, was the essence of Martin Luther King's vision of a colorblind, merit-based society. Treating people the same way regardless of their race or sex used to be considered the definition of fairness. Now it is understood to be vicious and intolerable. Kristen Clark, president of the National Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law, that's, how'd you like to fit that on your business card? She writes of Zinke, quote, the racist views harbored by members of this administration and their failure to ensure diversity must be condemned. His racist view, let me go back, let me let Zinke speak for himself. This is the racist view he holds. Having the right person for the right job is his goal. The most distinctive moment during the 2016 presidential campaign was Trump's insistence that he did not have time for political correctness in response to then Fox News host Megyn Kelly's feminist naggings. Here is a moment for the president to make good on that pledge by rejecting the relevance of race and gender to any job within his administration. As for Zinke, even if he didn't reject diversity explicitly, he ought to do so now.
This last line of hers about until it isn't, give me that again.
Yeah, this is good. This is really good. She says, the rule of the diversity regime is that you're required to be fanatically obsessed with race and gender until you aren't.
So
because at that unpredictable moment, whenever it comes, noticing race and sex becomes racist and sexist.
Right. So you get confused as to what you're supposed to do anymore. Someone, Roseanne is making a comeback on TV, right? There's a
huge,
there's
yeah.
a rebooted Roseanne show. Someone tweeted today, good insight into how working class thinks and laughs.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Innocent right. enough. Soledad O'Brien, formerly of CNN, retweets with the comment, white working class. Unnecessary. Obsession.
I didn't.
Obsession.
Soledad O'Brien still has a Twitter account? Honestly, is she still on television?
I don't know.
I'm not being I've not heard that name in a decade, I don't think. But your point is more important, which is why make that point?
Why?
Because for these people everything
all they see is race.
All they see is race. That's
and,
it.
And someone who clearly didn't, you know, someone was just making an innocent comment about a funny show.
Right. That's right. All right. Little David Frizzell, Shelley West.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. You know, a lot, there are big news stories that just never seem to get followed up on, even though, you know, the old expression, the wheels of justice grind slowly. Remember the Pulse nightclub shooting back in 2016? The gunman was, that was the one down in Orlando. Omar Mateen was the shooter. There was a case against against his widow, which has gone forward. And it, I just want to follow up on that because you kind of never find out what happens with these things. And yet there are, as I say, the wheels of justice grind on. The Orlando Sentinel is reporting this. Jurors in the Noor Salman case, that's got the gunman's widow, must now decide whether the wife of Pulse gunman Omar Mateen was a willing participant in planning the massacre or a simple-minded spouse from whom Mateen kept his plot a secret. Remember, she went missing for an extended period. The FBI had to hunt her, down and find her, at which you made a lot of people think maybe she was in on it. Maybe she was. This is what this trial is about. The 12-member jury started its deliberations on Wednesday, and they were sent home for the night about earlier today. They can deliberate as long as they need to decide whether Salman, who's 31 years old, is guilty of obstruction of justice and of aiding and abetting Mateen in providing material support to a foreign terror organization, the Islamic State. A couple interesting things there. Remember, at the time when Omar Mateen went on this mass murder spree at the Pulse nightclub, well, he was a lone wolf, right? Do you remember that? I mean, that's the way the news and the left always plays us. Oh, lone wolf, nothing to see here, has nothing to do with Islam, has nothing to do with who this person is, what his thoughts are, what his background is, has nothing to do with that, just a random happening. It's like lightning striking or slipping on a banana peel. Well, now the charges against his widow, Noor Salman, are that one of the charges is that she provided material support to a foreign terror organization, the Islamic State. That's ISIS. In other words, saying Omar Mateen was an ISIS agent. He was an agent of ISIS. Okay? So much for the lone wolf theory, right? The question is not whether or not Omar Mateen was a terrorist in league with ISIS. Okay, that has been decided already. All right. The question is whether or not she gave support to this ISIS-related terrorist. Okay. So next time something like this happens, and God forbid it will happen, unfortunately, you know, we know what the world is like. These things happen with disturbing regularity. But the next time this happens, and somebody says, "Oh, lone wolf," just remember Omar Mateen. He was the lone wolf too. He's already been found to have been an ISIS-aligned terrorist. During the closing argument, Salman's attorney argued that Mateen had no reason to involve his wife in his plan to carry out mass murder on June 12th of 2016. "Why would he tell her?" defense attorney Charles Swift said. "I cannot think of an earthly reason for it. I cannot think of one. What could she help him with?" Well, there's lots of reasons. I mean, that does not seem like something I would want my defense attorney saying, because it doesn't take more than about 5 seconds to think of reasons. How about because this is something you believe in and you want your wife on your side? How about because you need her to drive you around while you case the place, right? While you do your investigation of the place you're going to shoot? How about because you need her to make straw purchases of guns? There's lots of reasons. And some of them are out there. Swift and fellow defense attorney Linda Moreno repeated the same advice for the jury who will decide Salman's fate. Use your common sense. "Why would Omar Mateen confide in Noor, a woman he clearly had no respect for?" Moreno said. "She was not his peer, she was not his partner, and she was not his confidant." She sure was with him, though. I mean, the evidence that was given shows that she was with him during a lot of the planning, during a lot of the reconnaissance of the nightclub. And then she ran. Why did she run? Assistant U.S. Attorney Sarah Sweeney told Salman's jury that the government doesn't have to prove that Salman was an extremist like her husband or knew where he planned to strike. "The defendant was not the person who pulled the trigger in the Pulse nightclub, but what she did was serve as a green light for him to commit the attacks." Sweeney also countered the defense attorney's argument that Salman is simple. "She's not stupid," Sweeney said, noting that Salman has an associate's degree and speaks both English and Arabic. She does not have to be his equal in the attack, and in fact, she is not. Sweeney said the Pulse, where Mateen shot and killed 49 people and wounded dozens more in a bloody rampage, was not even his intended target. Initially, the prosecution said he hoped to strike at Disney Springs, a shopping, dining, and entertainment complex at Walt Disney World. Surveillance footage from hours before the attack shows him walking around near the House of Blues restaurant. Sweeney's argument echoed cell phone evidence that was revealed publicly by her defense on the eve of Solomon's trial. Anyway, when the jury reaches a verdict, we will let you know what that is as well. I'm Chris. He's Seth. We'll be right back. I'm Chris Buskirk. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. Why don't we go to the phones? Got some calls holding that I want to take. Give us a ring. 602-508-0960. Gilbert in Phoenix. Not Phoenix and Gilbert, but Gilbert and Phoenix. Welcome to the Seth and Chris Show. How are you?
Phoenix, Phoenix made the news, national news. You know, it seems like we're on a bad negative streak, the complaining about the stadium. And then the 30 illegal aliens that were housed in a house, right? They were basically slaves. You know, they were human smuggling. And one thing, you know, because all of my family were born in Mexico, and, you know, I'm from Mexico. And it really bothers me because, it's us Mexicans selling Mexicans, you know, to cross the border. You know, you have to pay thousands of dollars. And there's more than one way to pay the bill, whether it be cash or sex and so forth. And I think that this has to, you know, be called for what it is. It's human smuggling, it's slavery. And if you look at the $5 bill, in America, I think Donald Trump and other Republicans need to say this has to end. You know, the Chinese in L.A. are notorious. You hear news about that where they have to work and pay their, for the smuggling fees. And this is not – a lot of times people try to pretend this doesn't exist, but we have slavery in America, and we need to call it out for what it is. And all the more reason I like Donald Trump and what he's trying to do as far as protecting our borders. You could actually say it's a human rights issue. You know, where are the liberals in the United Nations? You know, this is we fought a civil war, the $5 bill. We didn't, but, you know, the Americans did. And I just think we need to call it for what it is and not be afraid to call it slavery.
No, Gilbert, I'm so glad you brought this up. I've been saying this for a long time. I mean, you are absolutely right. The idea that slavery ended at the end of the Civil War is ridiculous. It ended for a time, right? But we brought it back in the form of illegal immigration because the people who are coming in here, many of them, not all, of course, but many of them are being what is sometimes euphemistically called, they're being trafficked, human trafficked. But, you know, it's slavery. Let's just call it for what it is. You talk about the Chinese who basically, there's this form of indentured servitude, which is way too close for comfort to slavery. Then you talk about people being smuggled in from Mexico and from Latin America. It's outright slavery. I mean, I've said this. I've talked to cops about this. You want to know where there's slavery within a 5 or 10 minute drive for most people? You know these places that they're in the little seedy strip malls. They say massage parlor. Right.
Yes.
These places are hubs of quote unquote human trafficking. Human trafficking is just a euphemism because people don't want to say the ugly word slavery. And yet you're so right. The left wants to talk about these microaggressions. You know, slavery is still real. People are still feeling the repercussions of slavery from 150 years ago. What about the people who are actually slaves within 2 miles of you right now? Well, see, that's harder to confront, right, than just talking about things that happened a long time ago. And yet, the people who are telling us that there are moral superiors are not willing to do anything about that. Part of that is to get control of the border so that the slavers, right, the slave traders can't bring their slaves into this country.
And let me just finish saying one thing, you know, because I really appreciate Donald Trump being from New York and let's call him what he is. He's a Yankee. He's a Yankee New Yorker, and he's the one calling a spade, and he's trying to stop slavery. It's not a coincidence. Donald Trump's a Yankee, and I'm Mexican. You know, I was born in Mexico, and I'm an American citizen. I voted for Trump, and I love that Americans, Yankees, you know, modern day Yankees, are speaking out and trying to follow in the footsteps of their forefathers, and stopping this slavery that has basically been going on since the beginning of, you know, of recorded history. So, you know, God bless all of the people that fight the good fight, and thank you guys for letting me vent.
Well, Gilbert, look, you raise an important issue. It's one that I'm happy to bring up anytime. So we cannot talk about this often enough, because it really is a shame. It's not a shame in the way the left talks about things, where they say, oh, the microaggression, that's terrible. How can we do this? You know, we should be doing something about actual slavery that exists, not because somebody looked at you cross-eyed. Right. I mean, so there are. That's what I remember. It was about 10 years ago, Gilbert. I had a conversation with some cops, and they were telling me about the actual conditions inside these so-called massage parlors. Right. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? The real seedy places and these rundown strip malls. I had no idea. I mean, I just never. You know, if nobody tells you, I think you just don't generally think about it. And they were telling me, how the people the women who are working there, how they get there, what the conditions are. It is outright slavery. The cops know it. People who they're a small group of people who are working on this issue, they know it. But for most people, they just, you know, they just think, oh, seedy massage parlor. Yeah, it's not really massages they sell there, right? Ha ha. It's not voluntary. These people are trapped.
Yeah. And just because you're not a slave for life, but, you know, you're a slave till you pay the $50,000 or the $25,000,
right.
Nonetheless, you're still selling a human being.
Absolutely, you are absolutely correct. Yeah, and that is something that we should be. Yeah, you know, that's a place where we could be putting our constructive energies rather than beating each other up over using the wrong pronoun. You know, those are things that make a difference. Anyway, Gilbert, thanks so much. I really appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Let me go. Let me try and grab one more call before we have to run to the break. John, welcome to the Seth and Chris Show.
This is John in Peoria and Pretoria. Thank you very much.
I was going to let you say that. I love your nomenclature.
Well, thank you very much. I think one of you gave that to me. And what I'm giving back to you today is the I can't remember the screener, is the intake gentleman.
That's Bill.
He said, what's your topic? I said, well, I don't know, just trust me. He said, well, you've earned that trust. Thank you very much. Here's what I want to say. I heard two phrases, and I want to just finish with this. I'm nearly finished. I'm in the conclusion.
Okay.
One of you, I don't know which one, Seth or Chris, said these words. I don't know what the topic was. I don't even care about that right this minute. One of you said, no earthly reason, and then 60 seconds later you said common sense. I thought, bingo. You put those two together is exactly why I thoroughly enjoy your show, because you take it to not just earthly meaning, but always a higher meaning. And you don't only address common sense. Common sense is probably what it's worth, sort of common, not much. You take it into higher sense. And I hope everyone who is listening to this show right now will not only rebuy by tuning in again, but they will multiply by telling other people to tune in. And also, in this subject of slavery, if we don't take horizontal thinking to a heavenly higher calling, we are on most broad scale slavery.
John, I take your meaning on that. You're absolutely right. If people are not, this is kind of goes to the point Seth and I have been making about being a good follower. Well, who are you following? If we do not follow a divine authority,
then you guys do such a good job on that. And when I call in, I'm always going to give you a compliment. And if you get tired of that, deal with it.
I don't think I'm going to get tired of it. Probably not Seth either.
Okay. I'll call you in 3-4 months again. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. I appreciate the call. No, that's right. That's right. Reason and revelation are consistent with one another on most of the things that you have to deal with in day-to-day life. The place where they diverge is in the idea of eschatology, of salvation. When it comes to of basic right and wrong, we know common sense tells us right and wrong. Not it's wrong to steal. It's wrong to murder. These things we all know. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. This is the Seth and Chris Show. I'm Chris Buskirk. You know, I've been really reticent to even bring up Stormy Daniels over the past, a month or so since she's been kind of out there in the news. But I did earlier in the show, because Julie Kelly wrote such a, I thought, really just a biting mordant piece at American Greatness about the just this creepy fascination, her word, creepy fascination that the Never Trump people, Jonah Goldberg, Bill Kristol, some others have with her, and with that whole story. But also because it's just a prurient interest. I don't want to give into that, but this seems to be closer to its conclusion. Michael Avenatti, who is Stormy Daniels' lawyer, who's been very aggressive, has been very provocative in the way he has represented her, has now let it be known. It's on Mediaite this afternoon. He's now let it be known that that he's willing to settle with Trump for money. He's willing to settle for money. That's what this is. That's what this is. This whole thing is a big shakedown operation by a porn actress. People always use the term porn star. I've always wondered why. As soon as you take your clothes off in front of a camera, you're a star? Aren't there any starlets? Isn't there any people who are just workaday actors or actresses, performers? Anyway, this porn performer, Stormy Daniels, a hooker, basically, has sex with other people for money. That's what this is all coming down to now. Make a big hoopla, try and make a huge splash with an ambulance-chasing lawyer, and now you try and shake somebody down for money. You wonder why people kind of roll their eyes when they hear Stormy Daniels. You know, I was in New York earlier this week. I was talking with some people in the very, very mainstream media. I won't say what operations, but I'll just say as mainstream media as it possibly gets. These are people who are personally on the center left. And they're talking about Stormy Daniels. They kind of wanted to see if they could get me amped up on it. And I said, you guys have got to be kidding me. This is the dumbest story I think I've ever heard. Who cares? Who cares? The answer is nobody. We've been taught not to care about it. Now, you may think it's right or wrong. Obviously, I mean, if there was some sort of adultery, that's wrong. That's also between the president and his wife. For the country, there are a lot of bigger fish to fry. And I said, but you guys, I pushed back on this. I said, but you guys, do you actually even care? I mean, this doesn't seem like your beat, right? Haven't you all been telling us that private, consensual relations between two adults are no big deal and we're not supposed to think about it? Every single one of them conceded the point, said, yeah, actually, we really don't care much. We really don't care much. It's just, you know, it's a sensationalist story and we're gonna run with it and see where it goes. That's the thing. You get the sense that it just happens to be something to fill the time, something to fill the papers, fill some segments on television. But nobody actually cares because there's nothing there. You just have this, quite honestly, kind of pathetic person trying to shake the president down for money. And that's where that story starts and stops. This is the Seth and Chris Show. We'll be back after this.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.